Would you like to introduce our very special guest, Storm?
There's so many ways I can do that. There's such a long list of accolades and attributes. No, we don't want to get into that?
Nah, we don't have to do all that stuff.
Okay, all right. No. Well, because we are amongst tribbles here.
We'll get to it. We'll talk about it.
We can go ahead and introduce Universal Tribble, the one and only Dr. Derek Pitts of the Franklin Institute.
Thank you.
Philly native.
Thank you.
Doing what? Space stuff.
Pleasure to be here.
That's what we're talking about.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, I'm really honored to be here. Thank you.
Cool beans.
Yep.
That's cool.
For sure.
For those that do not know, Derek Pitts, among many of his accolades, he is actually a very noted astronomer.
It's true.
And as an astronomer, that means that he is a man of the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And long ago, there were three other great men of the stars. They were the wise men.
Yes.
Who came upon the Lord baby Jesus.
Came upon a midnight clear.
That's right.
Our very own Universal Tribble.
And as the Universal Tribble, as the noted wise man of the Tribble Nation, we will be picking his brain. Mm. We have asked all of those in the Tribble Nation to ask us some questions for the wise man. So
great. I love it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned because we actually did poll a lot of our listeners in Tribble Nation as well as on Newswork and WHYY, getting some listener questions that we're going to pose to Universal Tribble, Mr. Derek Pitts. Are you a doctor? Do I say Dr. Derek Pitts?
My degree, actually, the doctor degree is an honorary science degree.
Really?
From LaSalle University.
Wow, LaSalle. Oh, this is my old stomping grounds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Doctor of Science.
At least that's where I play ball at.
Anyway. Okay. Well. Stomped across the court. Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, then, Dr. Derek Pitts, we have a lot of...
I mean, I think it just sounds better.
It sounds better.
Yes, it goes. Certainly it does.
Make it so. But first, we, last month on our Black Tribbles Prime, we actually took all of December and we devoted it to talking about space.
It's
we
true.
Did a 3-week series called Spaceheads.
Spaceheads, go!
That's right. And every week we actually talked about a different aspect of space, the space program, and everything like that. And it was led by our very own Storm Tribble. And we wanted to do a quick recap of that with Mr. Pitts here in the studio.
Dr. Pitts. So, yes, like Lynn said, all month in December, we talked about space, that wild and crazy place. The first show we did was actually meant to focus on the Orion launch that happened in early December.
Yeah.
In fact, our show aired the night that it was supposed to launch and didn't because of... it was a machinery type stuff. The valve wasn't opening properly or wasn't closing properly after the fuel tank was filled.
It was a boat.
The boat. Whose boat is this? Hashtag whose boat is this?
Yeah, right.
Exactly. So we talked about what the Orion launch meant, even though it was a test flight, it was unmanned. We talked about what that meant as far as the future of space exploration, of planetary science, and of global participation in that. And also, you know, NASA returning to the playing field, if you will. Because as I'm sure you're aware, and anyone else who's following space exploration, we haven't launched Americans from America in a long time.
True.
And this is a step in that direction to change that and bring it back. So one of the things we talked about the Orion launch was what it meant as far as what preparation needs to be made as far as deep space flight.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I just wanted to see what your take on that whole, I guess, notch in time, I guess, since it's a stepping stool for...
It's an important stepping stone for NASA to get itself back in the game, really.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. NASA's sort of been out of the game in terms of manned space exploration, but there's a couple things going on in the background I think most people haven't really been able to see, and it is that NASA's been in the process of evolving. I use the term evolution for what NASA's doing, and I call it evolution because they're changing from being a space agency of the 60s and 70s to being a space agency of the 21st century. And what that means is they have to get rid of some stuff that anybody else can do and concentrate on the really heavy-duty stuff
right.
that others can't do. And that's what the Orion thing is all about, is it's about regaining the ability to put astronauts into low Earth orbit from Earth, from the United States. So what NASA's been doing is offloading all this other lightweight stuff. You know, it's letting...
like supply missions.
It's letting SpaceX do all its light work, right? And that's the way it ought to be. You know, back in the late 80s and 1990s, a lot of corporations did this thing called outsourcing, right? Everybody knows what that is.
Right.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, well, that's what NASA's doing. NASA's outsourcing all of its easy work. I mean, anybody can launch pizzas, vodka, and toilet tissue to the International Space Station. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science.
Right.
Well...
that is,
it is rocket science, but it's not rocket science, right.
So NASA's been doing that, and that's really important. So now, Orion, what does Orion mean? Orion means, okay, we're getting started back in the game, but it's only the tiniest little step, because when you actually think about what it takes to travel to some of these other places, you know, going to the moon, that's cakewalk.
Right.
Just cakewalk. But going to Mars... that's a whole different thing altogether.
Yeah,
yes,
altogether. Sir. Anytime you're talking about people being cooped up in a small space for, you know, something the volume of the studio we're sitting in, for
how long is that trip? Isn't it like a year and a half?
6 to 9 months. Oh. So the fastest trip you can make to Mars right now is about 6 months. You
can't 6 months less to than get to Mars.
To get there. Okay,
I punched so many people in the face.
You know what?
Can't.
It's a nightmare. It's a real nightmare, because here's the deal. It takes 6 months to get there, right? So you get there. You've traveled 6 months. If you haven't killed all of your crewmates by then, okay, great. So you got somebody else you can explore with. So you get there, and you decide that it's really interesting, and you want to stay for a little while. After all, it took you 6 months to get there.
Sure. Yeah,
you want to stretch your legs for 2-3 months, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, the problem with that is, if you don't turn around and come back within 2 weeks, the launch window for Mars being close enough to Earth to make the trip back really short has closed. So now you're stuck there. Until the next cycle of Earth close to Mars comes up. So you're there easily for another year.
Whoa.
Wow. Right?
So then, you know, the next thing that happens is the planets line up again, and then you take off and come back to Earth. So now you got another 6 months, maybe 9 months back to Earth. So the shortest trip you can make is like 12 months. The shortest trip. That's 6 months out to Mars, land on the surface, stay there for a week, come back 6 months. Then, if you want to stay for a while, 18 to 24 months.
Jeez.
Right? Wow. Now, remember, you have to have all your supplies.
Yeah.
Or they already all have to be there, and all the stuff has to work, or else you're dead meat on Mars.
Right.
Right?
Not to mention the fact, like, once you get there, you have to find it.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, oh, wait, we have to go to this particular spot on the planet.
Right.
And get to it.
Yeah, because there's no 7-Eleven.
Yeah, exactly.
Once you miss that trolley,
everything's got to be there. It all has to be there. And, you know, if everything is there for you to, like, get set up when you first land, okay, you're cool. But you have to depend on those resupply missions bringing everything else that you're going to need to be able to stay there.
Right.
So they're going to have to be launching stuff right after you leave on a regular basis so that you have a full supply of everything you need, or else you're dead, because there's no rescue mission.
That's
no rescue mission.
We did not think about this. We talked about this.
You know, coming back from the moon, you could hold your breath coming back from the moon.
Really?
Yeah.
And get back here.
It's 2.5-3 days. 4 days. Okay. Let's say you just like...
What kind of lungs do you have?
That's what I'm saying. Sailing the whole time. Compared to Mars?
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Point.
Yeah, see?
So. I just assumed there was a Google Maps of Mars. I didn't realize that you would have to...
Listen, the reason why there's a Google Maps on this planet is because we have a network of satellites. Google had launched that mission a couple years ago where everybody's taking pictures of everything.
Oh, we have good maps of Mars.
We do, but it's to the scale of Google. Like, there's only six...
Yeah, they don't have cars driving around taking pictures of your block.
Not yet.
But the one region, where the Curiosity rover is now, they have very, very high resolution images of the surface of Mars there. And when they landed that thing on the planet, they did a killer job of getting it to the exact spot where they, almost right on top of the exact spot where they wanted to land.
Wow. So the precision's good.
Precision's very good.
That actually brings me to the next thing we talked about. Not only did we talk about the actual Orion launch itself and it testing what conditions not only psychologically a person would have to deal with on a trip like that, but also what the machinery would need to be able to stand up to, you know, the environment of space and getting out there, and the entry point rather into Mars and then back into our own atmosphere later on, but also the methods of actually landing the landers on the surface. And one of the newer pieces of technology that I found during my research was the fact that instead of using jet propulsion systems to land, they started this. I didn't do my homework properly. I forget the acronym, but it's like almost like a flying saucer where they have these airbags that are, for lack of a better term, deployed that use the atmospheric drift to their advantage rather than trying to fight against it and waste all that fuel.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out different ways to do this so they can reduce the mass of the spacecraft they have to send to Mars, because mass equals
fuel.
Yeah,
reduce the mass. That's right. What I was trying
cut
to say.
Back, cut that. I knew it right away. That's what you were trying to say.
He was there. He was
okay.
Cut the mass back. Right.
Right, right.
The lower the mass is, the less fuel you need, the cheaper it is. And that's always a really important thing. The other thing that often isn't thought of, you know, talking about stuff like this, is that when you build the spaceship, how big are you going to build the spaceship to carry what you need or do what you need it to do? And then how are you going to get that spacecraft into space to begin with? Are you going to launch it off the surface of the Earth, or are you going to build it in low Earth orbit? Mm-hmm. Are you going to build it in orbit around the moon? And then how are you going to propel this thing all the way out there? So when you get to Mars, you want to make sure that you have the mass as low as you can for what it is you need to do, because that always costs fuel. The more fuel you need, the bigger the spacecraft has to be, the more it costs, the less you know, maneuverable, all that kind of crazy stuff. So that way of getting down to the surface, if they can really figure out how to use the atmosphere, the really thin atmosphere of Mars, use the aerodynamics to slow the craft down and maybe get it to land in a way that's similar to how aircraft land or something else like that, that would be a very big help, because they really don't have a really good, reliable way of doing this these days. I mean, they have a way, but, you know, one way is you have to use rockets to slow down. The other one is you blow up balloons all around the thing and let it bounce around and roll. Mm-hmm. And that's sure to make astronauts really barfy.
Yeah.
In your opinion, what is the major benefit of our exploring Mars and learning everything about Mars?
How ultimate do you want to go with that question?
Are there cats in
Mars? Let's go.
All right. So here's my belief about this. We hear all the stuff about exploration. Wow, it's really great to explore. Yeah, that's what men are supposed to do. People are supposed to explore.
Right.
That's what we're all about. Let's get out there and find out what's going on. Let's find out if there's any life on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. It's not a really cool environment for anything to be living right now on the surface. If it's living underneath, that's one thing, but it's certainly not going to proliferate that much. So what's the point? We're not going to move everybody out to Mars, are we? As a place where people could live, an alternative Earth? That's not happening. No. So what's the point? I think this is my own personal opinion. My personal opinion is that the ultimate goal of all this kind of space exploration stuff, looking for life on Mars, searching for extrasolar planets orbiting other stars, is a really big philosophical question about whether or not we are alone.
Right. That's what it boils down
to. I think that's what it boils down to, because, you know, I love the idea of space travel. I'm totally in love with the romantic idea. Let's get in a spacecraft, turn on the warp drive, let's go to the other side of the galaxy, let's go to some other galaxies and see what's up. But problem is, the reality is, as you all know, that the universe is way too big.
Mm-hmm.
It's way too big. Not only is it way too big for us, but it's way too big for every other life form out there that thinks it's going to get out and explore the rest of the universe. The physics for them is just the same as the physics for us. You can't do that right now, as far as we know. Yes, I've added my disclaimer. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, space is way bigger than we can imagine. We use all these great numbers, and we talk, you know, use all these words to help describe it. We don't have any idea how big it is, because we cannot imagine anything that size. We just cannot. So why do we need to know? Why do we want to explore? To find out if we're alone.
Why not, even though
the universe is so huge, we still want to know if we're the only ones here.
Was that romance? Is that what caught you?
Oh, totally. Oh, yeah. Two things caught me. The romance about being able to travel in space, and the scale thing.
Yeah.
How big is this stuff? How big is the universe? How big are galaxies? How many galaxies are there? How does the universe expand the way it does? what?
Right.
I can remember sometimes being in my room trying to fall asleep and just start thinking about space and thinking about how big and vast it is. And the more you think about it, the more insignificant I would feel. Mm-hmm. And I would feel so insignificant to the point that sometimes I would wake up in a cold sweat and I'd go running to my mom's room and I would stop at her door because I knew that if I knocked on the door, I woke up my pop, and I woke up my pop at 3 o'clock in the morning. That was bad news.
Which made you significant very quickly.
very much so. But that's how much that really like would just grab a hold of me just thinking about that. And think, like you said, when you think about that, it really just boggles your mind and gets you like going crazy.
Yeah, it does. It really does. And that's, and I think that's, I think, you know, the world we live in, the environment that we all live in that we're used to, this one, you know, gives us some very clearly defined sort of setups for how things are. You know, the room has four walls, the building has four sides, the planet is finite.
Right.
That's it. That's not it. You know, the rest of the universe goes on. And the other thing I really love about it is that the universe can do things that cannot happen here on Earth.
Like what?
So, can you imagine two stars orbiting a common center of gravity, a common point, once every 11 hours?
Binary system.
Yeah, in a binary system. Two stars in a binary system orbiting a common point once every 11 hours. It takes the Earth 24 hours to rotate on its own axis, right? So once every 11 hours, okay? It sounds like 11 hours. That's a long time. But wait.
No, it must be moving incredibly fast.
Let's talk about the masses that are involved here, okay? Yeah. So you're talking about something that's at least the size of our sun, okay? Our sun is, what, a million miles in diameter? It's blah, 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 you know, whatever you want to say. But if you just take it up, you're like two sizes. The forces that are involved are crazy to make two stars be able to do that. Okay, so now let's look at a different kind of star. Let's look at pulsars.
Okay.
I love pulsars. Rotating neutron stars. First of all, these are stars that are composed completely of neutrons, the most massive part of the atomic structure. Okay? So you have a star that's all neutrons. You all know the story. One teaspoon worth of neutron star material is enough to crash right through the entire surface of the Earth. Right down through the center of the Earth, back out the other side.
I had a dollar for every time I've heard that,
yeah,
I swear.
See?
You'd be burp. Or no, we'd have a dollar.
Right.
I'd have about $10.
If you imagine something half the size of our sun made up entirely of neutrons, well, the gravitational pull on that is so strong that it causes the thing to rotate at really high rates of speed. But it can rotate, depending on how big it is and how strong the force is, it can rotate on its axis hundreds of times a second, mm-hmm, or thousands of times per second. So I'm like, just, it drives me nuts to think about how physics, completely within the bounds, right within the laws, everything's cool, not bending anything, these kinds of things can happen. And here on Earth, that kind of stuff cannot happen. Our environment won't allow that. But out in space, all these other kinds of crazy things can happen. Black holes. That's totally crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? That
just the idea of something being so dense that light particles, light waves can't escape its surface. Like, all of everything we know is based off of, if not the spectrum that we can see physically, the spectrum that we can at least perceive on some other level.
And it totally tears apart every other kind of matter.
Right. Like, yeah. Mind-blowing.
Kind of makes you Citibank bill seem really unimportant.
Really insignificant.
Yeah. Speaking of insignificance and putting things into perspective like that, the other thing that we talked about in Spaceheads in December was the International Space Station, mm-hmm, and how many countries and people and agencies are involved with not only putting this thing together, but are still consistently on a regular basis going up there and conducting, you know, medical experiments, keeping an eye on meteorological
that stuff.
Stuff. and all the while still taking time to take amazing photos of the planet's surface and put it on Instagram and Twitter.
Well, you know, they have to have something to do with their time while they're up there.
Yeah, that's true.
Which
yeah.
brings me to my question.
Yeah.
Mr. Pitts. Dr. Pitts.
Get it right, yes.
Thank you, Patrick.
Do you think... He called me back, Drew. Okay. Do you think they're stuck on the space station for who knows how long every time? Do you think they have alcohol up there?
Oh, yeah. We did ponder this. I tried to lead a completely academic and insightful and thoughtful discussion about the International Space Station.
And it totally went right down.
And they were like,
problem at all, right?
You think they mix Tang with... How does vodka... How can one drink vodka in space? Can y'all do shots?
So all I can say is the primary countries involved in this are the United States and Russia.
Okay. Yeah. So yes.
So it's a yes. Everybody's drunk.
I'm thinking bourbon and vodka.
Thank you.
That's what I'm thinking.
But I'm sure the surgeons involved, the mission surgeons, the mission specialists
absolutely.
Are like, guys, come on, no.
Totally verboten. No, they're not doing any of that. No.
So that begs the question, how does it get up there? Who's smuggling it?
Look, you don't think they ain't not stashing? Look, there's been more than a few brothers up in the space station.
Yes, there's been 15 people in space of color. But what I'm saying is those mission specifications are based on weight, like you say, whether it be fuel or oxygen or whatever cable that's run so that the lights can blink.
Like a fifth of vodka is going to cause a lot of problems?
No.
I don't think so.
Is it? I don't know. I would be worried about that throwing off the trajectory.
A case of vodka every 6 months or a case of bourbon every 6 months is not going to cause a whole lot of problems. But wait a minute. Here's what actually happens. What actually happens is the engineers figure out exactly how much extra fuel is needed to carry that case of bourbon.
That's right.
So they add the extra gallons.
But that's what I mean. You can't smuggle it. Someone would need to be told.
Oh, they compensate for it. Well, this is a case of mice that's going to be tested for the experiments we're doing on these mice to find out how alcohol affects them in microgravity.
See, and I was going to get to that point because I was going to ask, did anybody ever try and bring a cat? Out space. Because I would love to see a zero-G cat just floating around, just real annoyed, just because it can't get any footing, so it's just like wigging out in space.
Yeah. You know, I'm afraid to think of what videos are being made that we are not seeing.
Yeah. That's it, see? See? Yeah.
So alcohol and cats.
That's not a denial that there are cats on the space station.
Hey, I didn't say there weren't.
See?
Now, we haven't seen the video yet that they don't exist.
It just got announced today that Ted Cruz is going to be the chairing the Senate Subcommittee on Space Science and Competitiveness. So he's going to have an oversight role in NASA. Does that scare you? Because it scares me. I'm just wondering, like, from a scientist standpoint, are you like, oh.
Well, for the listeners that may not know, and me, Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz is a Republican senator from Texas. And he has been against the whole climate change argument, and you know, NASA has conducted research on climate change. So, like, the two don't really...
But wait, you forget that Administrator Bolden is still in charge.
I understand that.
What did we call him? John Stewart Tribble? Is that what we called him?
Yes. No, he's Cisco Tribble.
That's right.
Cisco Tribble.
He's Cisco Tribble.
That's it. One thing I meant to ask Cisco you. Tribble. We need to find a way to get in touch with Administrator Bolden so we can get him to swear in.
When I see him, I'll be sure to hand him his t-shirt. And
bruh.
We geeked out about the fact that one of us is in charge of... of NASA, not to step on your question.
And he's a four-time space shuttle astronaut, too.
Yep. I know.
Yeah, absolutely. He's for real, for real.
He's boss.
He would know about the cats.
He would know about the cats. But he wouldn't tell you about the cats.
The problem is...
Because people like Tom Cruise would be on his case about
it. Yeah, the problem is Cruise has an oversight role. He's the guy that signs the federal checks.
Right, and that's who Bolden has to go to.
I wonder how, like, when I heard this, I was like, oh, this could get ugly. You know what I'm saying? Is a guy who's notoriously almost anti-science in charge of
in charge of the
NASA budget? Like,
which is already entirely too small.
Is this going to get problematic?
It is. You know, it's a double-edged sword because. Whereas Cruz will certainly object to any environmental control kind of stuff.
Yeah.
almost for the same reason why he would want to try to support NASA in a way. And it's because if he's from Texas, then there are a lot of jobs tied to space exploration.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And he wants to make sure that those jobs don't get lost. I mean, that's why, you know, nobody from Minnesota is supporting the space program. That's why folks in Idaho don't really care about the space program, because they don't have any industry there.
Right.
Okay. But in Florida and California and in Texas,
it's big. It's a big deal.
Okay. Right, it's a big deal. Right. So hopefully he'll be reasonable.
Fingers crossed.
Space cats. Still wanting it.
Space cats.
I'm sure there's a video on YouTube.
There's got to be.
Somebody snuck one on.
I would look for that.
We're going to look for a video of a cat floating in space, and we'll be right back here on Triple Nation after this brief moment. Stay tuned.